What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Deer Vein Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Heller, and today we have Dylan Lenz on. Dylan Lenz is a freelance photographer, videographer for a lot of different hunting personalities. Used to be on the Breaking Point TV, does consulting with Whitetail Habitat Solutions with Jeff Sturgis. And today we're talking to Dylan about a buck he just shot, textbook hunting strategy setup, doe bedding area, funnels, mock scrapes, getting box midday, all sorts of cool stuff. Hunt with Tony Peterson, we talk about that a little bit. So some really cool stuff on this podcast, and extremely a large amount of knowledge transferred. Like he does a great job explaining the scenarios, how he sets up, why he sets them up, and all that kind of fun stuff. So if you're hunting right now and you're in the rut, this is a phenomenal podcast to listen to. But before we get into that, just real quick, want to thank a few of our partners of the show. First one, Jocko Fuel and Origin. Jocko Fuel is a supplement line. So you got Jocko Go, which is kind of like a pre-workout. You got creatine, you got protein, you got all that kind of fun stuff. If you're into working out, like that's what you'd get. And even if you're not, like Jocko Go replaces like Monsters and Red Bulls and Bangs and Reigns, and it's much healthier for you, and it gives you the same amount of like boost and energy as one of those would do. So I strongly recommend the Jocko Go cans. Big fan of those. And then also Origin. Origin is 100% American-made clothing. So jeans, boots, hats, t-shirts, hoodies. The hoodies are phenomenal. Like I cannot stress enough how much I like the heavy hoodie and the kilo hoodie. They are fantastic piece hoodies that I love to wear all winter long. And then also they have their camo line, which is the Field Explorer line. So all sorts of good stuff there. Heller 10 will get you 10% off of Jocko Fuel and Origin. All right. So again, Heller 10, H-E-L-L-E-R, the number's 10. That'll get you 10% off both those. They do run awesome promos as well. And sometimes my code, my Heller 10 code will compound on top of whatever 20-30% off they have as well. So take a look at that if you're looking at buying any of that stuff. Next, Elite Archery. You know, those guys make a phenomenal bow. They make some, I guess, not a bow, but awesome bows in general. And I'm shooting the Elite Carbon Era. It's been extremely good to me as of late. I've got $2 down with it in the first season I've had it, in the first 4 or 5 months I've had it. Very confident with it, really like it. So at the end of season, if you guys are looking to upgrade, looking to try something else, go give Elite a chance, see what they shoot like, see what they feel like. I am very, very happy with my Carbon Era, and I'm not going to be switching for a long time unless, you know, they hit me up on a new promotion or something like that. All right. So go check out Elite Archery after the season's over. Last but not least, Onyx Maps. Could not, function as well as I do without Onyx Maps. You know, you can get things done, you can always get things done, and you can always kind of bandage them and stitch them together. But Onyx Maps helps you view the aerial, satellite, topographic, hybrid maps, private, public land boundaries, your waypoints. You can track yourselves, you can enter your wind, you can add photos to your waypoints. Basically, your whole e-scouting package can be done through Onyx Maps. And there's a ton more to it, like the Onyx Elite membership. They do master classes and all that kind of stuff. And it's just, in general, a phenomenal app to get and a great company to be a part of. So happy to be working with those guys. So go check Onyx out on Onyx Maps if you don't have that information yet. All right. So with that, let's jump into the podcast. Yeah, man. So you got them yesterday. Like midday, like 2 o'clock or what?
3 o'clock I shot them. Yeah, like 3:05. Just awesome. The woods were alive yesterday. Yesterday and the day before, my cameras were just going crazy. And yesterday, he was the 12th buck that I saw. And
no way.
I'm in central Wisconsin. And that's a lot of deer movement for where I'm hunting. And, you know, where I was at. So I was tickle pink, man. It was great.
Dude, that's awesome. And I know, like, you and I have been talking because you have the opportunity to hunt some land down by me and whatnot.
Yeah.
And like, dude, I'm just not seeing a lot down there on my cameras, but up here I'm seeing a bunch. So were you like getting multiple good bucks, or what was that shaking out like?
So what's interesting is this local area that I'm in, we have a lot of white deer. So It's a long story. I won't get into the whole thing right now, but we have a lot of white deer. And in Wisconsin, it is not legal to shoot white deer. So effectively, they are bred into this population, and now we're selecting for them. So a lot of the mature deer in this very select area are white deer because nobody can shoot them. They get to an older age, and they're pretty much running the roost on this parcel that I can hunt here. That's honestly not terribly far from my house. So on this property, I have two great looking white bucks that I can't shoot. And this deer that I shot yesterday is the only mature brown deer that I had pictures of and that I knew about and that I was hoping to run into.
No way. I've never had any sort of issues with white deer at all. It's just not something I experience.
Yeah,
it's like what you're experiencing, that kind of sucks. That's just how the law is.
I mean, it's cool. It's cool to see them, but you know, it was a lot cooler when it was 1 out of 100 deer. Now it's 1 out of 10 deer, and it's getting to be an issue where you talk to other landowners in the area, and they're kind of angry about it because a lot of their mature deer are bucks that they can't shoot. Which, you know, if you're leasing land, if you own land to hunt it, or if you're getting permission and doing a bunch of work on a property, you obviously want to be able to shoot the mature deer that are out there if they come in front of you. So,
right.
Yes, I saw one of my big white bucks that I have on camera frequently. I saw him twice yesterday, and it's just like, man, that'd be really cool if that was a buck that I could actually shoot, not just because he's white, but because he's a cool old deer that I essentially fooled and had an opportunity at, right? Like,
yeah,
it's just kind of interesting that in this area we have to deal with that. And, you know, maybe down the road there will be some different management practices for that, but as of right now, it's the DNR kind of just swipes it under the rug in this area.
Man, you got to invite like a senator out there to go hunting and like have them get in the tree and see all of them that he can't shoot. And then it'll be like, all right, we need to change this law.
It's really opening when you drive around at dusk or at dark, and you know, whether you're just last light or if you're shining and you look around, and you know, it used to be you told everybody when you saw white deer, you're like, oh my gosh, I saw a white buck out by Rusty's, you know, and now it's like, from Rusty's to my house, we see 10 white deer some nights on a good weather night. And it's like, oh, there's another one. And, you know, they obviously stand out pretty good. So it's just crazy to see how many of them there are.
Yeah. Is it true, like, if they have a spot of brown, you can shoot them?
Yeah. So, yeah, they have to technically be piebald. And I'm not sure if it has to be a certain size or, you know, I've heard rumors that you can't shoot them if they're brown on the head, because a lot of times that's just from them rubbing on stuff. I honestly haven't looked into it that much. The deer that we have around here are not piebald. They are white deer. So I have not seen any or heard of any that are actually piebald. I've only heard of white deer or brown deer. And what's interesting is you can see a brown doe with white fawns and a white doe with brown fawns, like, or a fawn that has one of each. Like, it's just very random.
Huh. Man, that is pretty wild. So, okay, so you got a couple mature deer on the property. You got, like, you kind of mentioned two white bucks, one brown buck.
Yeah.
And I know you've been putting time in here. I know you've been all over the place, right?
Yeah.
Out, were you in the Dakotas? Were you out in Dakotas?
Yeah. Honestly, what's just, you know, I'm very thankful for is we got done early out in North Dakota. I was filming Tony Peterson from Meat Eater out there, and I was scheduled to film and not come home until tomorrow, the 4th. And okay, so we just happened to, you know, be in the right place, right time, got lucky and killed a great buck out there on public land from the ground. Great story. I won't tell the whole thing because it's Tony's story to tell, but it was an awesome time. We had a blast and we got done early. So I got to come home to Wisconsin. Perfect timing. I was sitting out there going, oh my gosh, I wish I was in Wisconsin right now. My cameras are lighting up and boom, get to come home early and hunt. So it was just like the storm to get me in a tree. And honestly, like, I don't think I've hunted Wisconsin. I don't think I've hunted for myself, period, the first 5 days of November in probably 6 or 7 years, because I'm always filming. So this to me was awesome. Really special to be out there.
Oh, I know. I always ask you, like, when are you going to hunt? You know, and you're just like, I don't know.
I've been a lot more fortunate this year in just the way that I've scheduled things, that I feel like I've gotten to hunt a lot this year, which is great. You know, I've been smart about when I take my work trips and when I'm home, it's kind of, okay, I've got some time to get in a tree, I'm going to take it, you know? So that's, that's been awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you were, I mean, the snap I got from you the other day was, like left Nodak at 4 AM, got home at noon, had lunch, said hi to the wife, and I'm in the woods.
Yep. Great. It was great. And yeah, what was interesting about that day is, you know, so that was Wednesday. I got home, I just hopped in the shower, grabbed my hunting stuff, and I went straight to the woods, got in my stand, and then, you know, I don't know about you, the first thing I do is I'm checking on my cell cameras when I get in the stand. Like, did I get in clean? You know, was there anything in here? You know, blah, blah, blah. And I check it, and I went to one farm that I can hunt here near my house, and the buck that I shot was daylight, looked like he was seeking or trotting or chasing or cruising on this other farm that I can hunt in a stand that I could have hunted with that wind, but I couldn't get in there. This is getting to be a long story, but the canoe that I have to get to this property washed away in floods that we had last week here. So I had no way to that property until I borrowed a canoe to get to it yesterday. So it's just like a weird sequence of events that, you know, transport where I wasn't in there, he was daylight, and I'm kicking myself going, oh man, I'm in the wrong spot, you know?
No, that makes sense. And I didn't know, like, I'd seen some of your snaps and some of your Instagram posts and all that stuff. I just didn't know what you were doing with that canoe. I was like, a lot of private landowners are not going to, a lot of people who hunt private are not going to canoe in.
Yeah.
Was that just like, is for canoeing in, was that like an access?
Yeah. Yeah. So I have two properties this year, actually the two properties near my house that I use a canoe on a lot. And one is right along the Wisconsin River. And in order to get back to some of the more deep stands, rather than go through a bunch of woods and potentially blow stuff out or go through a food source, you know, in the morning and blow it out while the deer are out there, I can kind of get around them and get to the backside of this property if I just take the river. So that's been for, you know, really quiet, stealthy access. And then what's really cool is I've been hanging my stands on the backside of bedding cover, where I can put my stand, you know, the river creates a natural edge, right? And then there's other kinds of, you know, different cover types in there that I can then get downwind of. And so literally my stands on a couple of these spots are 30 yards from this, you know, waterway, where my access is just, I maybe leave 30 yards of ground scent, but as long as the wind's blowing back towards that waterway, I'm pretty much free and clear. So it's been really that way.
Yeah. That's like, the ghost entry and exit, man. You just like pop up, you're there, you pop down and you're out.
Oh, it's been awesome. So yeah, yesterday, I was not planning to do an all day sit. But I got to this spot. I got the canoe back there, got in clean, actually got in pretty early. I don't usually get in. I was in 45 minutes before light, and I got in that early and had some does come through in the dark. And I'm like, all right, I guess I got in clean, you know? And, my plan was to get down around 10:30 or 11. And I just kept seeing bucks and I kept seeing cruising. And I'm like, I'm not really equipped. I didn't bring enough to sit all day. You know,
you didn't bring like 7 oatmeal cream pies.
I had the peanut butter cream pies. I had 2 of them, and I went through those. I finished my coffee by like 10, and I'm like, there's no way I'm going to make it till dark. I can't do it. And I had already, wife, you know, I've been gone all week. I'm like, all right, I'll come home. I'll run the dogs. I'll have lunch, blah, blah, blah. So I waited, and I was like, every time I see a buck, I'm gonna wait another half hour, you know? And it was getting to be a point where it's like 29 minutes and I'd see another buck. Like, gosh, I gotta get out of here, you know? And so I'm like, all right, noon, I gotta get out of here. I'm gonna go walk the dogs, I'm gonna grab just a quick bite, and I'm gonna be back here by 1:15. And I was, so I got back in my tree, and I was, again, very stealthy with, I left everything in the tree, which was awesome. Got back out there, got into, I was using a platform or a saddle, and clicked in, looked around, and I hear bat, bat, and here it's one of those big white bucks bumping does past. I'm like, whew, I guess I, you know, got in clean. This feels great. And I sat for another hour, hour and a half-ish, and I was going through a whole fiasco on my phone trying to buy licenses in Arizona. They went, I don't have great service on this property, and I'm texting my buddies. We're trying to figure this all out. And, you know, I'm just frustrated. I don't have service. It's, you know, 2:33 in the afternoon. It's not likely that a buck's going to be cruising at that time. And I hear something, I look up, and here comes my target buck.
No way.
you know, one of those shit show moments where you're not expecting it. And all of a sudden you hear that cruising buck sound and you're like, that's gotta be a buck. And you look and I just saw antlers. I never even, never looked at them through the glass or nothing. I was just like, that's him. That's the buck I'm here to kill. And, he had daylighted in this area twice in the last week. And so it was very likely that I'd lay eyes on him, but all of a sudden he's coming and he's coming quick. I grab my bow, start my cameras, and he is veering to hit my mock scrape. And I don't think I have a single picture of him on this scrape. I might have one of him passing it. There's another scrape that he typically hits. I have a lot of pictures of him on this other one. And was not expecting him to hit this scrape, but he went right up to it. He stopped. He's got his nose and he's sniffing it. And that's when I laced him. It was absolutely unbelievable. Couldn't have drawn it up any better. I have hung, I don't know, 100 mock scrapes in my life. I've seen deer hit them. I've never shot one while it was actually hitting it. And it was just too perfect. I never had to stop him. He just came in. He was doing his own thing. He never knew I was there. Never saw me draw. And all of a sudden he just got hit by an arrow and didn't have time to duck or anything. He just took off running and it was incredible.
Dude, that's fantastic, man. That's awesome. So, and how far was the mock scrape?
The mock scrape was at 27 yards. So, you know, it's in that comfort zone where you're not right on top of them, where they're going to pick you out. And where I'm hunting specifically there is kind of on like this corridor of dry land. You know, it's pinched by this creek or river. And then there's marsh or swampland on this side. So there's this strip of dry that they can walk, and then it kind of splits from there. So it's this perfect, like, intersection or T where a lot of these deer are pinched to because of, you know, water. And so he came right there to hit that community scrape that I had set up there. And I mean, it was just absolutely beautiful. And, man, I didn't even have time. My pin was set at 20 yards. And like, normally if you see him coming, you know, I'll dial it to exactly 27 for something like that if I have time, but I did not have time for that one. And I just said, okay, I'm going to just hold it, you know, 4 or 5 inches high. And I watched that arrow sink right to where I wanted it to. It was absolutely perfect.
Dude, how, I have so many questions. I'm trying to figure out like how to walk through them all. When you first saw him, you said there was like no time when you first saw him. So you're on this like, this high ground land bridge kind of,
yeah,
in a way.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. Between a marshy area and a river, and there, and he's coming. Is he coming from left to right for you? Is front to back?
Right to left. So yeah, he's coming from like far away. I would say, you know, he's this corridor, I'll call it, of dry ground runs for a couple hundred yards, and it starts to widen out where it kind of has it like funnels down and then it splits. So it's likely that these deer are going to pick up on that. And then as they get closer to me, it'll be more likely that they're within range. Right. So I picked up, you know, that sound, I heard it, and I'm using a saddle, which, you know, for saddle experience, I honestly don't have that much. So, you know, it's just a spot where it makes sense to use it. And, you know, I'm on the far side of the tree and I can hear something. So I peek around and holy crap, it's antlers coming my way. And, you know, I just had enough time to, at that time I spotted him, I would guess he was 65, 70 yards, and just, you know, on the move. He was scent checking and he was on a mission. And it was either that he went to that scrape at 27, or there's a more natural scrape right below me that was tore up. And I'm talking, it's less than 5 yards to this scrape that they, you know, are really using quite a bit. And I'm like, if he comes to that one, this is going to be really intense. And I don't know, you know, how this is going to go. He's going to be coming right at me. It's not the way that I had pictured them coming from. And thankfully he veered to that, you know, more opportune shot scrape. And so I had time to draw while he was, you know, getting past some of the last branches and trees. And he paused for, I think, 4 or 5 seconds before I took the shot. And it was just, you know, he had his head up hitting the scrape. It, you know, one of those moments that'll live in your memory forever, right?
Yeah, dude. And you got it all on video?
Yeah. I mean, so what I'm doing this year, instead of, you know, cell filming and, you know, running a DSLR to be on deer, what I'm doing is I'll run a DSLR to sit over myself and kind of, you know, have me on one side and then what I'm shooting at on the other side. And then I run a GoPro on my shoulder, so it gives you kind of that point of view. So, you know, it's got me drawing with this deer, you know, so you can see the arrow, the sights, and kind of see me settle. And then you just see that arrow go. So, I mean, it's a GoPro at 27 yards. So it's not like you're picking out hairs on this deer, but you can definitely see the action. And to me, it's fun to film that way, because when you watch back, it just feels like you're there in that moment, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's like that point of view, like you're able to see the draw and all that stuff. No, dude, that's really cool. So, did you, and I want to, like, so then the next thing here is, like, awesome story, awesome buck, like, too cool. Breaking down, like, positioning and strategy on this whole thing.
Right? Yeah.
So strategy, entry and exit is canoe, right? Canoe yeah. in, get set up. And then, like, positioning on the piece of property, we haven't talked about that a ton, but it, like, it sounds like it's a natural pinch point or a natural funnel.
Yeah.
And there's also, you said he's like scent checking. So it sounds like there's bedding areas. Can you like paint the picture of how it lays out a sure. little bit more?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, this particular property is cool because it's a mix of upland and lowland. So you have like these, you know, several acre kind of forested wetlands where you get this really, you get some of the grasses growing in it, but it's more like, you know, tag alder and brushy swamp. And then you have more of, they'll meet, when I say a ridge, I don't mean like a, you know, out western Wisconsin type of ridge, but maybe a 4 or 5 foot rise in the elevation where it's definitely dry on there. So then you get into more oak trees. So then you get into better acorn production. And then you might get a little bit better oak or regeneration underneath that. So that those are more like high ground bedding is kind of the way I picture it, where you'll have some of these deer bed in these swamps, and then you'll have some of the deer bed up on the high ground where there's really good browse. When the acorns are good, they'll be in there a lot more during the daylight. And so I just, the way that I'm hunting this particular property is really hunting the outsides and then leaving as much of that in the middle as I can, where my sight, sound, and scent doesn't get into. So all those bedding areas and stuff, I might have cruised through them this summer as I was scouting it quickly, but I haven't been back in there. I don't have any cameras in there. All my cameras, all my stands are on the outside edges. And then I just hunt when the wind is right on those outside edges so that, you know, again, I'm not blowing those areas out. And then if you're a buck that's scent checking those areas, let's say this, there's a really good bedding area with a travel route on the east side of it. Well, when you have west winds, it's carrying the wind from those bedding areas towards that travel route. And then I have my stand further east than that, so that it's likely that when a buck cruises, he's between me and that bedding area. He'll never get my scent. And especially in this case, when I'm blowing it back over a waterway, but he feels like the wind is in his advantage, right? He's like, all right, I'm working the edge of this. There's nothing that's gonna be a threat to me now. And I'm scent checking. I know what does are in there. I know if they're coming into estrus, whatever. And he can be very efficient about the way he moves. And the last thing on his mind is that you're going to be further downwind than him, because there's so little cover downwind from him before you hit this, you know, waterway. So it's just like the perfect situation for this. And so I'm just hunting those longer range cruising movements here. I'm not necessarily tucked right up on a bedding area on this property. It's more, I was planning for hunting this pre-rut and rut time when these deer are bouncing in between bedding areas. So that way my pressure is very, very low. It's not like I'm, you know, inadvertently spooking these bedding areas out when I'm in and out of the stands, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Dude. I mean, that sounds exactly like that's textbook what you would read from a Tody Peterson article.
Yeah. Yeah. And man, I just got to say, that's the first hunt I ever went on with Tony. I read his articles for years. I filmed him a couple other times, not hunting, but doing some videos. But that guy is fun to hunt with, and he knows his stuff. Like it's interesting to like see the way that he thinks about hunting and just how it's very like textbook setups for him. It's like, oh, they're going to do this here because of this, you know? So that to me is really cool. And I wonder, you know, I can't recall any specific article, but I bet a lot of the stuff that I've learned along the way was picked up from reading Field and Stream or Peterson's bow hunting way back in the day, or probably some of his articles, you know?
Yeah. Oh, for sure, man. Okay, so that setup is downwind side of the bedding area and hunting the outskirts of the property, so you're not being intrusive and not bumping everything, and you got nice clean entry and exit. And then as far as the shot and everything goes, the mock scrape, like, did you know that there would be a scrape right underneath you, or was that like totally new this year?
So this property is actually, this area that I'm hunting is new to me. So, you know, I went through there and there's just a really hard packed trail, right where this scrape is. And so honestly, like I hung that scrape there, but it's more of a natural one. It's not like there was going to be a scrape there if I didn't enhance it anyway, just the way that it lays. Like there's a, you know, this is very like micro, you know, strategy, but like there's a musselwood or an ironwood right there. And if you know those trees, they have really good lateral branches. Well, they hang right over this trail. So it's like, whether or not I would literally have to cut that tree down for there not to be a scrape right there. So I was like, I might as well just hang a scrape there. And then it's just a gimme shot right to that, you know, if that happens. And I have had some younger bucks hit that while I'm there. And it's intense because, I mean, they're literally right under you. And here in central Wisconsin, I don't really worry about hanging my stands quite as high. It seems like, you know, you're in the hills and stuff. You typically need to get that higher elevation if you're hunting uphill, et cetera. But like here, you get 15, 18 feet up and that's plenty high. And so like to have that scrape right under me, I've had some deer hit it and it's like, oh man, like they're like, you know, they got their head up, they're hitting the licking branch and it's like they can make eye contact with you at any moment. It feels like they do, but like you're just so blended in with that treetop that they don't pick you out, you know.
Yeah, that's so you put the one right below you at 5 yards as well.
Yeah, like I said, like it was gonna be like just the way that there was gonna be a scrape there. So I was like, hey, I might as well just hang this so that it's right where I can get a shot at it, you know. And that way I actually ended up running a cheap Walmart Tasco on that scrape. And like that way I had two kind of, you know, intel points here and I could figure out, okay, if deer are actually using this edge to cruise more, or if they're hitting that more, you know, traditional mock scrape that I hung kind of towards the other edge of this corridor. So.
Yeah, no, I find it interesting that you have two scrapes that are basically 30 yards apart.
I very rarely do that, but like, this is just one of those scenarios again, where it was like, I want it to be right there, you know? So I was actually kind of reevaluating this as I was in there yesterday. I was like, I should probably just get rid of the other scrape, but I don't know that I want this as the only scrape here at 5 yards. You know, it's like the likelihood of you getting drawn and getting a shot at 5 yards just seems a little, you know, a little risky. It's way more comfortable when it's at, you know, 25 yards and, you know, you're not sticking out like a sore thumb then.
Yeah. Is that like the only like good tree in the area? Could you move your stand set up around or?
Yeah, I that's the other thing I was looking at. I just like this tree for what it gets me in shots to kind of like this intersection, this one gets me the best real estate as far as being able to reach far to one side and far to the other. If I move, then I'm kind of marginalizing my opportunities on one side and favoring another, where I'm at right now, it's like the best of all worlds, you know? So I definitely want to rethink the scrape for next year, but again, like, I don't know, it worked this year. So I guess we'll kind of see what happens in the future.
Yeah, man, dude. Yeah, I'm sure like you would heavily rethink it if your target buck came to 5 yards and busted you and got out of there. You'd be like, all right, this thing's got to go, or I got to move, or right.
Yeah. And, you know, I've had that close scrape. Honestly, like I pulled that card and the buck seemed to be favoring that one more so than this other mock scrape that I have. So, I mean, it was just absolute luck that this buck yesterday went to the other one, you know.
Gotcha. But, Were the white deer doing the same thing?
Yeah. They're very similar. It seems like they're I don't know if it's just something that, you know, maybe I'm just playing this in my head, but like it seems like they're not as wary. They're a little bit, I don't want to say dumber, but a little bit bolder as far as like they're more of my daytime movers. And I wonder if that's just, hey, this works for me, I don't get messed with. You know, whereas these brown deer maybe don't make it to maturity if they're doing that same stuff. So like, maybe this is like these white deer that's like, I don't know, worked for me last year. I was moving on, you know, October 27th, broad daylight, you know? Yeah. So I don't know. They definitely have the same tendencies, but for me to see that buck twice yesterday, that big white deer, and then just the camera, you know, the trail cam photos that I have a lot more of these white deer. And I don't know if that's just that they're living there more frequently. Maybe this deer that I killed is more of a fringe buck. But it definitely seems like those white deer are running the roost on this property.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just curious about that just because like they have no pressure. Are they hitting the same scrapes? They're taking the same trails. They're doing the same thing. Whereas, you know, the other ones have more pressure. Right. So it's kind of like,
yeah. It sure seems like they're doing the same stuff, you know, acting the same way, taking the same trails and stuff like that. I actually did yesterday. I thought I saw this white buck I have out there. I'm not exaggerating. I would guess he's probably a 7 or 8 year old deer. I'll have to send you a picture of him. Like, he looks like his body's built like a bull. Like, he's just, I mean, hell, he's old. And when I saw him yesterday, I was like, okay, he's running this roost. Like, it'd be kind of cool to see him really up close. So I grunted and he heard it, but he's like kind of on a mission. And I was like, I'm going to stories at him, see if he really thinks he's top dog. And I did. And you can see he like stopped and he kind of like thought about it. And it's not like he like looked my way and like thought about it for a long time, but he just like, not today. And he's just like kept going. And then he came back with does later. So I think he knew where the does were. And he's like, oh, and I don't got time for this right now, you know, like that kind of thing. So,
yeah, dude, that in itself is pretty cool to see, you know, yeah. Like I'm going to think about this, but I'm going to go get the ladies.
I catch him a few days later, like maybe once we're, you know, past the peak of the route where these does are maybe becoming a little bit more scarce and then there's a little bit more competition for him. Catch him on that day. I think he would have probably actually came in to see what was going on, you know?
But. Yeah. Yeah, it'll be a rude day for those guys if they flip the laws.
I've heard, you know, you sit at the on a bar stool and everybody tells you they heard this or we should do this and that. And, you know, I do think at some point they're going to have to change the management for it because they are becoming so prevalent. And, you know, we're obviously favoring, like we're selecting for these deer to be more prevalent. So at some point it's going to get out of hand. And I think we're kind of almost at that point right now.
Yeah. So what about, I totally agree with you. And what, back to kind of the strategy of the property and stuff. So like you're hunting the outside fringes and it happens to be that you have a really nice pinch on that out on one of those outside fringes, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of how it outlines. Would you like, even if it wasn't like downwind of a bedding area, would you still sit like just a nice pinch like that? Or would you be angling for something else?
I you know, it's very situational there, but I would say, especially like pre rut and rut, when you know that these bucks are moving longer range, I don't think it's as important to be right on bedding because what they're doing is they're going from bedding area to bedding area to bedding area. So you don't necessarily have to be on that bedding area. You just have to be on the route that he's taking while he's scent checking those bedding areas. So like if you're not on a really thick bedding area and you're in this transition zone where you have a good X or a T crossing where a couple trails come together and it's likely that, hey, I'm going to come through here and scent check this bedding area. And then that puts him in this kind of more open country. Then it's obviously a little bit better for your access in that instance where you're not as likely to spook any deer getting in or out of there. So you're just on that, you know, that corridor kind of, you know, not necessarily where the deer are laying down during the day.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And then vice versa. Like if you have a, let's just say you're hunting a small piece and it's only like 20, 15 or 20 acres and you just have like in the back corner is like nice bedding. Like you're just going to sit on the downwind side of that. But instead of, you don't want to be able to, it's not from what you're telling me is like, you want the deer to be able to travel between you and that bedding
and
not like get in behind you.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. So, so with that in mind, like I'm just trying to think of scenarios that a listener might have. I have a couple of them, but I know you and I have talked a lot. So you know my scenarios. If you're looking at a bedding area or you're going out and it's, what is it today? It's November 3rd. You're going out on November 3rd. And you're like, all right, I got this bedding area and there's two trails that kind of like are on the downwind side today. Are you going to put yourself on the furthest outside? And even if like, are you going to like sacrifice one of those trails? Cause, or are you going to try to sit in between them and just get a shot at them? Or
yeah, again, I think it's very situational. You know, if you're in flat ground, like I am here, if you have thermals and you're in the hills, it's a very different story. Then I'll probably split the difference and go in between them. Cause one's likely downhill. So that way, like in the morning, which is typically when you're going to get in there to access to hunt that, your thermals should go right over whatever lower trail. So then you could essentially sit between them and hunt both trails. But here in the flats, like your wind is a lot more true to what it's actually forecasted. So then I would likely take that outside trail. But what I typically will do is like, especially on a property that I've had permission on throughout the summer, where I can go in and do a little bit of prep, I'll make that outside trail more attractive, right? Like that's where I'll put my mock scrapes. If I'm doing a water hole, it'll go on that outside one. And I might even find you know, a spot where that trail and where those trails either meet or split, and maybe I'll make one less attractive and drop a tree over it or something like that, where now it's more likely for them to take this, you know, outside trail. And maybe you could even thicken up near that other trail so that, you know, they start to bed a little bit out closer to you as well. So then you're really working that outside edge.
Gotcha.
That's very, very situational. Like it's, you know, it's hard to throw that as a blanket statement. You know, it's really depends on where you're at and what you're working with.
Yeah. So, and I will, I haven't told you this yet, but for everybody listening, Dylan's with Whitetail Habitat Solutions, still does work for him consulting with Jeff Sturgis. So it's fun. Yeah. It's fun. Personally, it's fun to hear you say like, you know, Jeff Sturgis has a ton of phenomenal knowledge and he's got a great YouTube channel and he puts out so much great information. It's fun to hear you say that it's fun to hunt with Tony Peterson. Cause you get to hang out with Jeff, you get to hang out with Tony, you get to hang out with all these other people who have all sorts of different strategies.
Well, I think that's why I'm, you know, very, very fortunate, very blessed in that, you know, I hunt a lot of different styles with a lot of different people. Right. So like for example, next week I'm hunting with a completely different guy where it's like, I don't know, we'll figure it out. You know, I get to learn what he thinks about, and, you know, sometimes who I hunt with, they're open to, you know, kind of hearing what I have to say and maybe take suggestions from me. So it's really interesting to like team up with different people and kind of like forge your own kind of ideas, you know, and see if they work out or not. So you're like blending these different ideas, you know, rather than, you know, it has to be Jeff Sturgis's way and Jeff Sturgis's way only. Now I can say, you know what? Yeah, I like that. And I think about that a lot, but you know, this has also worked for me. What if I try, you know, spinning this into some of my own hunts? And so,
yeah,
I think that's, you know, there's definitely certain ideas that don't mix well together. You know, if you're doing some things one way, you kind of have to do it all that way, but there's other, you know, minor details in hunting where it's like, yeah, you can do this and also do this. And it might sound contradictory, but they actually kind of work together, you know?
Yeah. Has there been a scenario, and you don't need to give the full details or the people involved or anything like that, but is there a scenario where you get into a setup and you're like, what are we doing here? Like, this is nonsense.
Oh, all the time. And, yeah.
All the time. And then, and then have they worked out where you're just like, oh my God, I can't believe we killed that.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I don't want to like give any specifics. I'm be like, oh, this guy's a moron. You know what I mean? But like, you know, there's definitely times where I'm like, I don't really get the strategy here. And, you know, a deer will come out and read the script. And it's like, okay, that it worked on that one, but I don't picture that working 100% of the time or even 70% of the time. You know, like there's definitely those situations where then it's like, if a lot of times those are the type of hunters that aren't as open to ideas or, you know, working together where it's like they just kind of put the hunt together and I'm just there to document it, which is then I just kind of log off and I'm like, oh, whatever, you know, I'll just, you know, I'm filming this guy's experience, where it's obviously more fun to hunt with somebody that's like, what do you think about doing this? What if we sat over there, you know, and you can kind of like work together. Cause then, you know, it feels a lot better than when it comes together and it's like, whoo, it almost feels like you were part of it. Right.
So, yeah. Yeah, I have to imagine when you're hunting with someone, and I know this is the case because I've filmed with people before too, but when both of you have high confidence levels,
it's oh, like, man.
All right, we're in the right spot. We're in the right tree. Shit's going to happen today. Like, I'm jazzed.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's definitely like that confidence side of it too, where like, it's obviously just more fun to sit in the woods when you're positive, right? Like, we've had like, I'll give the really brief synopsis because Tony already posted about this, but like, we killed that buck the other day in North Dakota in a blizzard. It was windier than all heck. all day. We started the day in a tree, and it was only going to get windier throughout the day. And we only made it so far in the tree, and we were like, all right, we got to get out of here. Like, we're not going to make it up here, you know, and there's not going to be anything moving up here. So we ended up making a ground blind, killing this buck off the ground. And it was one of those times where, like, literally, I would say a minute to maybe 90 seconds before he spotted this buck, I was like, no, I literally said to him, like, there's no way we get skunked in here today. There's no way. Like, we're too positive. We were sticking it out, you know, thinking like, man, we really like did our work today. We earned, you know, some kind of encounter. And literally a minute later, Tony's like, here comes a buck. And I'm like, oh, all right, cool. You know?
Dude, that's gotta be such a good feeling.
Oh yeah. There are those days where you're out there, it's like, I literally feel like I'm just logging the hours today. Like, I'm just out here because, you know, everybody else is hunting and I'm not at work, so I should be hunting kind of days. But definitely, like, having that positivity just makes it that much more enjoyable. And, you know, sitting there and picturing, all right, maybe he's going to come in off of this trail. Maybe he's going to come over the horizon here. You know, like,
yeah,
that's way more positive and think about it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, okay. So we took a long tangent there, but what I was going to tell you was, remember when we were walking through my property and we were up on what we would call the knob? It was kind of like the top where there was a rock cliff all around one side. You and I went up the backside of it one time.
Yep.
So when we were up there in the, like, the top back corner, which basically cliffs out, there were some rubs, and you were like, I think you need to move the stand over here. And I was like, I don't think so. And you're like, no, I'm pretty sure you do, because you're going to catch a buck circling around. And it literally, like, for everybody listening, if you're thinking about it, it's the knob. It's like a point, a ridge line that comes out, but the whole south and east side is all cliffed out. So basically they get on this ridge and they can only go off on the north or west side of it. And they'll come from the west and they'll run the south end of it on a north wind. And then they'll run and hook towards the end where to the east end. And it all cliffs out. Then they got to circle back and go west or north. And I had my stand, for all intents and purposes, for everybody listening, I had it in the southeast, like southeast corner of it. And I wasn't getting great winds. And I was like, there was like a T there. And I was like, I want to shoot this. And Dylan saw it. He's like, I understand why you want to shoot that. You need to move it to the northeast side. They're going to loop around. You're going to get more. You're going to bust less, and you're going to get a better wind. And I was like, all right, well, Dylan, you're the boss, man. Like, I'll listen to you on this one. So I hung that stand last year. I shot a nice doe out of it, and I hunted it a few times and didn't see anything. And I was starting to, like, get skeptical. I had a trail camera up there, and I knew the bucks would do what you said they would do, which is that basically run that south side. And if you think about it, like, 50 yards from the end where it cliffs out is all just like kind of multiflower rows, berry briar, down trees. So it's good bedding area. And we have the stand like 30 yards from that. And the other day I was out there with a buddy, and it was a north-northwest wind. We got up there to get in the stand. And for whatever reason, this is just hill country, it was east, just had an east wind up there. It was like 3-4 miles an hour east. And I was like, okay, apparently we can only hunt this on a west wind and not a northwest wind. Too much north is giving me an east wind in here. So we kind of circled around that a little bit. We found a little ground blind and we just kind of set up. Well, wouldn't you know, like 45 minutes into it, here comes a buck on that exact trail that you had told, that you were like, bucks are going to run this and go right around here, right around this bedding area. They're going to scent check all this. And then they're going to end up right here. And here he comes. And fun fact, like, we were on the ground and we kind of saw him at 30 yards and he got to like 25 ish. And at that point we were trying to move to see him. And we had like some swirly winds and stuff. And eventually he just stopped and stared straight at us. And I don't know if it was us moving or if it was the wind. I don't think it was, but I don't know exactly what it was. I think it was a little bit of movement. Like, I had moved and my buddy had moved, and I think he just picked up on that, but then he busted out of there. But I thought I'd let you know that you were right. You were in fact right.
Well, I mean, it's so cool to like see deer do what you're expecting them to do, or what you've manipulated the habitat and now they're using it in this way too. Like, to me, like, that's what's so fun, is like there is that element of it that's like, two some degree, they're predictable, right? Like, they have tendencies. So, like, yeah, maybe only 70% of them do that, but those are pretty good odds when you're playing against the house, you know? So, like, they obviously have the house. So, that's pretty cool. That
right.
Over time, you can kind of learn the way that they're using that. And, all right, if I hunt it this way, and now I've learned the winds are swirly in here on these winds, so that gives me these conditions to hunt this spot, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think I have, after that encounter and he took off and stuff like that, I might move the stand, 10, 15 yards because I have a little bit. I might mess with it a little bit because that's me. You can't ever leave it there too long in the same spot.
Yeah. Always tinkering. I'm the same way.
Right? But it was cool to see just the flat out, downwind of bedding and your stands on the outside of that. Like, if we had been in the tree stand and had a west wind, deer would have come at 15 yards and we would have been able to shoot. Right. It was all right there. So, a quick question for you on your mock scrape being at 27 yards, being at that range that just out, do you set a lot of those up for 25 yards ish, 25 to 30?
Usually I would say 25 is probably my sweet spot where this one, just the way that I had to, just the way it was, is 27. I would say most of mine are 22 to 25, something like that, where if you're in thicker cover, maybe a little bit closer, maybe then it's 15 to 20. But if you're in more open woods like this was, I want a little bit more of a buffer, right? Where it's less likely for them to see you, hear you moving, whatever. But yeah, it's just situational. I would say for the most part, 25s. That's okay. My number.
Gotcha. All right. So the two, strategically talking back to that, the two strategies we have here, fundamentals or whatever you want to call them, are bedding areas and a pinch point. And you happen to have both of those line up. We talked a little bit about if you just have a bedding area, you kind of want to just sit on the downwind side of that and assume that, well, based on what you want to do, you can either split the difference if you're in hill country and you can get away with it. Otherwise, you want to improve that outside edge and have that and sit that so you're not busting the inside edge. What about if you don't have bedding areas? Like, are you just trying to focus on a pinch point?
Yeah, I mean, if you don't have bedding areas, that's kind of a bummer. You need to at least know where the bedding areas are, right? So, like, you don't want to just be hunting a highway if it's not connected to any cities, right? Like, you gotta know, all right, there's something over here that they want to get to, whether it's a food source or really good bedding. And now this is now connecting those features. So in that instance, let's say you owned 8 acres or 10 acres and your neighbor has really good bedding and there's agriculture on the other side, or, you know, there's another guy that hunts over here and he doesn't hunt smart, but he has good food sources. So those deer are spending their time over there at night. Well, they're likely coming through yours to get to this other neighbor's to bed then, right? So it's like, now I want to make it so that there's two really good trails that they like to take through my land to then get to this other feature that's not on my land. So I might do a little bit of travel corridor work where I'll hinge some trees or drop some trees that make this the most efficient route across my property on one side for one wind, and then I'll do the same on the other for another wind. And I'll probably have a mock scrape on either of those and maybe a water hole at one of them, whichever one I can get to and fill, you know, without any damage.
Gotcha. Okay. So at that point, yeah, you're thinking just connecting two points of interest, I guess, is a good way.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Awesome. And those points of interest, like, could it be on your neighbors, like, you see, look over at your neighbors and you see a big scrape. Like, could that be the point of interest?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that just tells you that they're moving through there. But then I want to do is like tap into that movement, right? So like a scrape, I don't think is as significant, just because, you know, you could literally go cut that scrape down. It's not like a deer is going to go to it anymore, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? You want something a little bit more substantial where, you know, maybe it's bedding, maybe it's an apple tree. If you're hunting suburban areas, maybe it's your neighbor's bird feeder, you know? You know what I'm saying? Like, something that, you know, that you're have a goal of getting there, you know, somewhat frequently.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. What about, and I just brought up scrapes, but I wanted to ask you this too. What about scrapes like during the rut? So November 3rd, like, we're getting pretty much into the hot and heavy cruising. Do you like, are scrapes more or less like hunting over scrapes more or less effective in this next week or two?
So my scrape use has died today. Like 2 days ago, 3 days ago, excuse me, October 30th through November 1st. Here, for whatever reason, this year we had the snow and then the clearing weather. My scrapes were hot. Like they were pounding these scrapes. Yesterday, this buck that I shot was the only buck that came to that scrape that I was watching. I was getting a few pictures here and there on, I've probably got, you know, a dozen cell cameras out. I was getting one here and there of another one getting hit and that kind of thing. But my water holes were pounded yesterday and the day before and today they're pounded and the scrape use has really shut off. So that tells me that these bucks are now seeking hard, right? Like they're cruising. They're not as worried about, is this doe hot? Is this doe hot? Because the likelihood of a doe being hot is pretty high. So they're just like, I just need to find does. Like that's all I need to find. And if I find does, I'll find one that's hot. I don't need to go sniff my scrape and see if a hot doe whizzed in it, you know, and then go find her. You know, it's like they're at this point in my mind, like that's just the way I rationalize it. I don't know if that's the way it actually works scientifically, but like, that's just the way I think about it is like right now, it's not as important for them to like, to go, you know, check those scrapes. It's more important for them to put on the miles and find those does. So like at the same time, a lot of times those scrapes are on those travel routes. So they might still be using the same trails. They're just not stopping there to sniff the vine and paw up the dirt, you know?
Yeah. So then from a camera perspective, like if you have your camera and it's only on the scrape and you're not getting the trail, then your camera might be dead, but they might just still be using that same trail.
Blurry shot of them just, you know, running by and you're like, hey, that's a good body on that one. I don't know what deer it is. You know, like they're literally just moving too quick to even get a good picture of them. And I actually got a couple text messages today from clients that are like, I think the lockdown's happening. I haven't gotten any pictures. You know, how would you hunt it now? You know, that kind of thing, which is, that's cool. You know, that I'm not the only one that's noticing that my scrapes have, you know, gone dry right now. And that's not to say that in the middle of the night, these bucks are in between does and then they take a break and go hit some scrapes, but it's definitely, you know, down quite a bit.
Yeah. So more, so less like if you are, I guess if your strategy until now was if you are intentionally like sitting over a scrape rather than sitting over that scrape, try to find the highway that led to that scrape or the reason that that scrape was there. Cause a lot of times those scrapes tend to be in high traffic areas anyway.
Exactly. And that's just it. Like I, every one of my stand locations has a mock scrape on it just because it's on a trail or like a T of trails. So I have a scrape like on that T then or X of trails. So I'm still going to sit that same spot. I just might not be expecting a buck to stop and sniff the scrape.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Cool. What about, man, you've answered so many questions so thoroughly. I don't have like, I don't have a ton more questions about that. Cause the idea is you want to hunt a funnel. Cause it's got a big, cause it brings them. You want to hunt a funnel between two points of interest. So go and scout and find that. If you can't find that, then you want to hunt a bedding area. If you can't find that, like the best way to find that bedding area, my opinion is to walk around and jump deer. And then you know where the bedding area is.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like if you're still doing that scouting right now, I think you're a little bit late to the party. I personally, like I everybody has their different styles, right? Like there's guys that are a lot more aggressive, they'll go blow out a bedding area and then sit right over it. I'm more of like, I think there's bedding there. If I'm coming to a fresh area, let's say I'm going out of state, I'm not as likely to just go pound through a bedding area and be like, yep, they're bedding here. Now I need to set up. I'd rather like keep that area sanctified, keep my intrusion out of there and be like, it looks thick as shit in there and there's some, you know, scrapes or rubs on the outside of it. That's a bedding area. I'm now going to stay out of there and hunt this outside edge of it rather than go traipsing through it, blow it out, and then expect the movement to still be, you know, as high as it was prior to me doing that.
Yeah, no, that's very fair. You bring up a good point because like you can look at a thick area and I've been in this situation many times where you look at a thick area and you've never been to a spot before or something, you look at it, you're like, all right, that looks like bedding. Should I go through that? Should I not? You kind of set up and nothing really happens. And you go check it out and you're like, oh man, this isn't like as thick as I thought it was. You walk 10 yards into it and there's nothing, like it widens right back up. But so you bring up a great point is if there's a scrape and a rub or rubs outside of it, a lot of times that indicates that it is a bedding area.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I mean, that sounds very like rudimentary, elementary of like, oh, find a rub and now you're in the Bucks. But like, that's just like, all it does is kind of like affirm your, you know, suspicions of, I think deer are bedding in there. Now there's, if I walked 50 yards and I can see in there a little bit and I can see two or three rubs and there's a big community scrape on the outside edge of it. And I was like, all right, now we're talking. Now I know that I can hunt this and, you know, expect to see some movement here. They're obviously, they've been using it till now, you know, rather than just finding a, you know, thick patch of cedars and going, I think they're bedding in there, but I don't know that for sure. You know, like, yeah, for some of that sign, obviously, but I mean, that sounds so like, you know, first grade stuff, like, oh yeah, find a scrape and, you know, now you know.
Well, man, the way I killed that buck last week was because of it.
Oh yeah.
We walked out of there, was like, oh, there's a rub. Oh, there's a buck. Cool.
Heck yeah.
So the other, and you said it earlier, like Tony has like a lot, so much of his hunting styles come down to fundamentals, like, and he just is able to put those, sounds like he's able to put those puzzle pieces together in a way that a lot of people, it might take them like a couple walks through the area to figure it out. And he's like, oh, and he gets it in one walk and he's like, here it is, here it is, here it is. Boom. We need to be right there.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And like, there's a guy that like he has the fundamentals down so much that even in different landscapes he can pick out those same tendencies, right? Of like, I think they're bedding there, there's some good oak trees there and there's some good sign under those oak trees, they're bedding there, they're coming to here, that means I need to be here, you know. Or like if you've only hunted, you know, big woods in the UP of Michigan, maybe you aren't able to apply that to the Great Plains of North Dakota, you know what I mean? So like, it's cool to like be able to go to these different landscapes and pick out the same kinds of deer movements just in a different style, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. What about, what's been your experience with, like bucks just like totally disappearing from a property? Like, you know, oh man, I saw him for a couple of days and now he's just, I haven't got a trail camera picture of him for 5 days. Like,
yeah, I this time of year is, you know, obviously really frustrating when that happens. This buck that I just killed yesterday, before I got pictures of him on October 30th, I did not have pictures of him since October 8th. So there was that 3-week window in there where I'm like, oh, he's gone. Did he get killed? Did he get hit by a car? Did he know I was in here and now he's not coming back in here? And it's just, you know, kind of going off in my head, like, he was here on the last really good cold front. He's going to be back on the next really good cold front, you know? And so we got the snow, we got the cold, and there he was. So I think right now those bucks will disappear. Maybe they're back at their home range and they're running does in their home range. But as we get more into the peak rut here in the next couple of days, that's when they're going to go back to, you know, you had a picture of a buck back on middle of October in the middle of the night, or once on a cold front day during daylight. Now, as you get further into that peak rut, that's when you're going to be more likely for him to run that route again, you know, establishing and going back to that established longer scale territory that he has. And now he's seeking out those later does, you know.
Yeah.
And in the week of October, first couple of days of November, he's staying in that, you know, same property that he lives in most of the fall. And now he's had fun in there the last few days, and now he's got to start to search a little bit more, you know.
Yeah. No, I mean, that makes total sense. And it's one of those, I used to previously think, and a lot of people do, is like the rut's kind of chaos. Like they just kind of go wherever and they just kind of go where their nose takes them. And they could be here today and tomorrow they could be 3 miles away. Yeah. I had a podcast with another guy that I got to publish yet, named Brooks. And he was saying that the last two bucks I killed in the rut the last 2 years have been on patterns that I've noticed, like on high wind days, he does this. Northwest cold front days, just exactly what you're saying. He does this, and it doesn't matter that it's in the rut or it's on October 1st.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what's really cool too, especially if you have an area that you can run, you've run cameras on for a couple of years, is, you know, you always hear about, oh, I had him on camera last November 6th and this, you know, haven't had a picture of him since then, and now on November 6th he's back. And you know, it's kind of cool to see like how in a buck's mind, like they're just going through that annual pattern of like, all right, now I'm done with that for the year, I gotta go do this again, you know. It's just that time of year, you know. So like, if they already have given you those hints and established that pattern, you know, you're talking 365 days from the last time he did that and he's going to do it again. Like, that's just crazy that they're wired that way. But like, if you can key in on that and know when he's going to do that, you know, maybe you're watching those conditions and that wind to change or, you know, pick up or whatever. That's just pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then would you say that like if it's, again, it's November 3rd today. And if I had trail camera pictures, like I'm trying to plan, you know, vacation, I'm trying to take time away from family, yada, yada, yada. And I got a bunch of pictures of deer on the property from, you know, the 10th to the 13th. I've looked through that and I've seen like, those are seem to be the hot days. Like, and I'm not seeing anything on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd. Like I should be planning my time for the 10th to 13th based on prior year.
I would put a big asterisk on that though, and look at your data from years past and be like, okay, why were they here the 10th through the 13th? Was it, you know, cause there was a big cold front, and you look at the calendar this year and you look at the forecast and say, okay, well actually the cold front is coming November 13th to 16th this year. I would probably shift it and hunt the cold front if that's the stuff that they were doing it on the year before. I don't think it's necessarily like a photo period thing in their mind of like, to that exact moment they know when to be there. I think it's very conditional, and they're not going to do it if it's a hot rainy day. They'd obviously probably rather do that on a clearing day. The pressure is not rising, the air is clearing, the conditions are better for them to be cruising. I would shift my trip then.
Gotcha. Okay, so yeah, kind of what the conditions were in prior years and kind of map those conditions to the time frame and see how close you can get.
Shift it 5 days one way or the other, you know. I think that, you know, yeah, you had on camera November 6th last year. Well, it might be November 11th this year if the conditions are now the same on as they were, you know.
Yeah, no, that's fair. What about does coming in the heat the same time of the year? Is that like, what do you think about that, or how does that play out in your book?
I'll call it a discussion, but Unger and I were just arguing about this the other day. Like, Unger's a good guy that I hunt with all the time. Good dude. But we like to go back and forth on this kind of stuff. I truly believe that does and their family groups come into estrus the same time every year. That I believe is hardwired with the photo period that they experience from sunlight. Right. So like in the reason that I believe that is I used to work on a deer farm. And so they would schedule the artificial insemination guy to be there when these specific does were going into estrus, and they knew that a year ahead, right? So like they knew that doe 2246 is coming in at this time, so we want the doctor here to get her pregnant, right? So to me it's pretty black and white on that. I don't think it changes with the moon and all that. Like I'm if this doe and her family group come into estrus at this time, that's when they're going to do it every year until that matriarch dies. Now this doe family group now goes and lives with this doe family group. Now those sync up, and you know, who knows whether they cut the difference or, you know, it goes to that matriarch then. Yeah. It's just how they all sync up like that. And I mean, that's like a, you know, I don't know if you want to call it like a evolutionary advantage or, you know, whatever. It just makes sense that all the does in one area would be hot at the same time, because now they can all get serviced by bucks in that one spot. And now that buck can go and do that somewhere else, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, I mean, that makes sense. And I'm going to, so like I, like that buck that I shot the other week, he had just finished breeding a doe.
Yeah.
And I am going to, if conditions are correct next year, I'm going to hunt that same spot and just for fun, like just to see.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, that's awesome to think about, honestly. It's like, hey, if I could only paint that doe and know where she's at and know that she's going to be in on October 26th or whatever that you killed her, like that'd be awesome, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to give that a go because she was kind of in a secluded area and that bucket kind of pushed her into this like area that was kind of cut off from a lot of the other stuff. So if I could sneak in there next year and kind of do the same thing, like maybe I'll get a trail camera in there earlier on and check that out and see if I can do the same thing. And, you know, maybe that was like that buck's like bullpen or whatever, like he was pushing that doe, like he liked does in that area versus next year, the buck's going to try to push her in a different spot or something like that. I don't know, but maybe she'll be in that same area and maybe she'll just be around and
yeah,
it'll be my Judas doe.
That's, and I think that's great.
All right, man. Well, what's up? Yeah. What's up next? You're trying to buy tags for Arizona. Or before we go on to that, sorry, before we go on to that, anything else like that you think is pertinent for the rut? Like, I mean, all sitting all day, do you believe in, obviously you do, but you like that every 30 minutes. If you're seeing something every 30 minutes, stick around or.
Yeah. I mean, once I get like, all right, I've got stuff to do today. I have to get out of the woods for an hour. Like usually I'll sit till 10:30 or 11. Then I just kind of give myself that rule of if I see a buck, I'm going to wait a half hour, you know? Or no, especially this time of year. But I do like sitting all day. I'm finding myself doing it less and less the more I don't want to say experienced or smarter I get, just the older I get. It's like this hasn't worked for me that much in the past from, you know, 11:30 in the morning till 1:30 in the afternoon. That's kind of been my experience dead time. So it's like, if I can get out of here, if I'm going to swap stands, run back to the truck, eat a sandwich and go to another stand for the evening, that's the time that I'm more likely to do it.
Got it. Okay. That makes sense. All right, man. Well, yeah. Anything else? Anything else on the rut stuff, where you should be hunting, what you should be doing? How do you kill big bucks like Dylan Lenz?
Like stay positive and like, you know, like I feel like there's been years in the past where I get down and I'm like, man, everybody else is killing bucks. I'm looking at social media, I'm scrolling, and everybody's got a big one except for me. And then you hear a twig snap and here he comes. You know, like at any minute, it's going to change for you. Just be in the right spot, play the wind, access smart, play your cards right, and it could happen. Like just be ready, you know?
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, last podcast I did with Parker, it was all about like, don't put your bow too far away from you. Like, yeah. Put your bow right there. So when you all of a sudden he's on top of you and he's at 12 yards and you're like, oh my God, there he is. You don't need to like extend your arm all the way out and lean to grab your bow or whatever. Like be ready. All right, man. So real quick, what's next? You're going to Arizona. You trying to get, did you buy your tags?
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if we talked about that before you started recording or not, but anyway, long story short, I can't remember if we did or not. I shot that buck yesterday while I was trying to buy tags for Arizona, because I learned yesterday, thanks to a good buddy of mine, he texted me, gave me the heads up. The tags went on sale yesterday. They're now allocated via quota. And so it was like then and now, you had to get the tags. It was down. He texted me, he goes, there's only 220 left. I'm like, oh my God, I got to do this now. I don't have service. I'm pissed off trying to figure that out. Texting my other buddies that I'm actually going on the trip with, like, drop what you're doing right now and buy these tags. And by the time we all bought our tags, there was 98 left or something like that. And in that process, I shot that buck. So like, it was just a whirlwind of this all going on. And I honestly think that probably helped me like not get too keyed up watching this buck come in. You know, I was kind of like distracted and didn't have that like buck fever moment. I was just like, oh God, there's a buck. I got to make it happen. It wasn't like I was in my head for 2 minutes watching him come in, you know? So
yeah. That's great. You're like, come on, baby, load, get in my cart. Hold on, I gotta shoot this buck. Set your phone down.
Exactly.
So is that like, is that coos deer?
It'll be muley and coos. Way that Arizona is now working, it's just a completely different system from what it has been in the past. They have like, when an area hits its quota, it then closes this unit. So like, we don't even, it's hard to like e-scout it right now because you don't know what's going to be open in January when we're going, you know. So I'm just kind of putting that on the back burner and I'll start paying closer attention to that in December, you know.
Yeah.
But we got the tags, so we're all good to go there. We got the flights booked and that'll be a fun one. But I got so much between then and now that it's like, that is far on the back burner, you know.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. That's cool. All right, man. Well, thank you for popping on. If people want to reach out to you, if they want to get you to walk their property and do the whole habitat thing and all that jazz, what's the best way to do it?
Holler at me on the gram, man. That's where it all goes down in the DMs.
that's where you see the peanut butter cream pies. That's where you see the fish fries.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the good stuff. Good dude, stuff. Did you create that new account? Is that yours?
DW Fry Report? You bet, dude. Dude, we're up to like, I can't remember, it's like 28 different fish fries we've tried now. It's so fun.
Yeah. Yeah, is that central? And that's Central Wisconsin?
Yeah, Central Wisconsin Fish Fry Report.
All right. Gotcha. No, dude. I was getting to know your snaps. You're like, I got out of the woods before I hit the truck, it was ordered.
But yeah. For Friday during the fall, which is very rare, so I was like, I'm getting a fish fry tonight, and like I literally live 150 yards from one of the best fish fries around. So I was like, I'm going to call. I'm going to pick up a fish fry on the way home. It's going to be great. And it was.
Yeah. No, I'm getting one. I'm getting one tonight. My wife's going Christmas shopping with our neighbors. And I'm like, dude, it's November. They're like, well, everything's on sale now. And I'm like, ah. So they're doing Christmas, not just shopping, but also decorations, Thanksgiving, oh, all that nonsense. So I'm like, fish fry it up, man.
Heck yeah. Have an extra old fashioned for me.
That's right. All right. Well, thank you, Dylan. I appreciate it. For everyone listening, if you enjoyed the podcast, please like, subscribe, tell a friend, give Dylan Lenz a follow, hit him on the DM, follow CW Fish Fry. That's going to be your best investment of time just to look at Central Wisconsin fish fries. Appreciate everybody, and Dylan's contact info or his handle and all that stuff will be down below. I won't give out your cell phone number.
Get it.
All right, catch y'all later.